You made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say, a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to even consider your opinion, because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the worshiping Dionysus man, sipping on science today. Welcoming any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you are too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to be talking about one quick exercise to optimize your genitals for aesthetics and pleasure.
Hell yeah.
And as always, I'm joined by some fine and fascinating guests in the lounge today. Ron, the geologist apologist. How you doing today, Ron?
I'm doing amazing. I'm on day 2 of a 10-day vacation, so I'm picking butt.
Nice.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't realize that. Where are you at?
Oh, I'm at home. Staycation.
Oh, fuck yeah. Those are the best.
Just fucking off from work for a week.
Sleep in your own bed.
Is that Amber, my sister who loves the woo-woo and is always right, too? How are you doing, Amber?
You finally got my intro right. You usually say that I think I'm always right, and today you said is always right, so.
Oh.
And we have it now on record.
Ha! What a fine example of you thinking you're always right. Okay, we've got a really fun and informative show for you today, brought to you by Wonka Industries, the original slave labor candy.
That Wonka's a little creepy.
We're going to take a quick look back at the Astor Place Opera House riot of 1849. We've got some hot science news, an orangutan medicine man, or ape if you prefer. We're going to be talking about astronaut fitness and a new study that shows that the gravitational constant just ain't so constant after all.
What?
Yeah, right? We've got some snake oil involving price fixing and artificial cost inflation. We've all been dealing with inflation. Well, it turns out some of it may just been greed and not natural inflation.
Yes, I am shocked.
Shocked. Yeah, right. We all are. Shocking. We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact Checking Time. And of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel good story. We do encourage you, please reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com. If you want to send an email, maybe you want to send us a text or voice message. You can do that 443-499-8253. You can also drop a comment over on social media. We're over on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, you know, all the cool ones. Are there new social medias that I don't know about?
I'm sure there
probably are.
But
yeah.
I don't know. There's always something new.
But for now, let's hop in that time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in our time machine.
Okie dokily. All right. I have to admit, when I was prepping the show this week, I had this is like literally zero knowledge of this historic event, which are always the most fun to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Always the most fun. In 1849, specifically in May 10th, 1849, there was a giant riot in the now demolished Astor Opera House in Manhattan, New York City.
That named after the famous Astors? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yes, it was. They estimate between 22 and 31 dead and more than 120-ish injured. The deadliest to that date at the time of a number of civic disturbances in Manhattan that was going to generate, that was pitting the immigrants and nativists against each other, like the Scorsese film Gangs of New York, is kind of about this, the same era as this happened. So at the heart of this thing are two actors. How actors have such oversized pull on historical events of in the 1800s, I don't know, because you know, Lincoln killed by an actor.
1800s, nothing. We still have actors that have so much influence in society. kind of a long-standing thing.
Name one.
Name one. Let's see. Which actor is most...
No, no. Hold on. Don't name one that thinks they have influence. Name one that has real influence. Oh, wait.
Okay. Taylor Swift. Real
Not
influence.
An actor.
Huh?
Not an actor.
Oh, that's true. She's a musician. I threw them all into the celebrity category.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well,
that, you know, because, like, that really is... All right. Think of one. I'll think of one.
You think of one. Okay, we'll get back to you. But, yeah.
Yeah. How about Ryan Reynolds?
What has he influenced?
All sorts of things. He's developed companies. He has influenced buying choices. I mean, you could say any actor that peddles anything.
Do you ever start a riot? Do you ever kill a president?
What's his death total?
Well, maybe he hasn't started any riots. But I know there are actors involved.
Yeah, not yet. Ryan Reynolds, I know you're listening. Get on.
How many kills? How many kills, Ryan?
Anyway, back to the
confirmed
history.
Kills only.
Okay, actors, riot.
So let's dive in. This the build up to the tensions that led to this riot wasn't just immigration and nativists, though that was kind of at its core. I guess you could say these two actors personified both the sides. We're talking about an actor named Edwin Forrest and an actor named William Charles McReady. So Edwin Forrest was one of the foremost American actors of the day. They celebrate him. He had these robust interpretations of Shakespeare heroes where you do Shakespeare kind of like over the top and big, loud, physical, emotive actor, right? He really appealed to the working classes who kind of saw themselves in him as this the kind of rough and tumble guy, but he's up there, you know, doing Shakespeare, which, by the way, apparently in the 1800s, performing Shakespeare was just a thing people did to pass time. Like, I'm talking like gold miners around the campfire in the Klondike of Alaska, right? Would be like, Romeo, oh, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Yeah. Bonkers, boggles the mind. I think, was it Ralph Waldo Emerson once had a quote where he was like, aliens looking at the planet from outer space would probably call us Shakespeare instead of...
Right.
That's how prevalent Shakespeare was at the time.
Well, I mean, he still is. It's like...
He's still huge, right? Still huge.
Huge.
But the average person can't act out a Shakespeare play with their friends from memory around a campfire.
That is true.
So it's diminished a little bit. I know if you get me in the right crowd, we could redo Arrested Development episodes, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
So Edwin Forrest, his rise was kind of happened and was kind of paralleling the growing sense of kind of American nationalism at the time. He's a cultural hero, right? Ideal self-made American, like, hey, and now, you know, I started with nothing. Now look at me, just through talent. I'm Edwin Forrest, American actor hero. In contrast, we had William Charles McReady, who was kind of like the quintessential British theater guy, refined, controlled, intellectual, a little hoity-toity, right? Cultured. He really appealed to the upper echelons of society who admired British culture. He was a big draw for the rich crowd, obviously British. And both these guys, they were touring America and Britain, right? So like their rivalry was natural because they were both kind of Shakespeare powerhouses that were in touring Shakespeare shows. And this all on that backdrop of mid-19th century U.S. cultural social flux, right? Irish immigrants especially coming in, cities rapidly expanding, lots of class division. Lots of grappling with identity. This is 1849, so this is before the Civil War. You know, lots of strife going on in America, not just with immigration cities. Theaters became oftentimes were the focal point for tensions because it was one of the few public places where different social classes mingled. Right,
right. Theater and the pub.
Right. Well, even a pub, you'd have like a dive bar and you'd have a upper class pub. Right, but the theater. Like, you know, McReady comes into town or Forrest comes into town. He's only playing at one theater. So if you want to see him, rich or poor, guess where you're going? That one theater. right? So they get to mingle. Although I'm positive there are plenty of bars where rich and poor people, as today, get drunk. So Forrest and McGrady had this rivalry that was kind of more than just a professional jealousy. It was tapping in to these class resentments. Forrest's supporters were using the rivalry to stoke anti-British sentiment, which was already all over the American population. It was something that the Irish immigrants and the nativists could agree on.
We hate the Brits.
Yeah, fucking
common enemy.
Right. So those marginalized people used this rivalry as kind of a venting outlet, an excuse to slag off the Brits, as they say. So there they are. They're touring both countries. The thing went down. McGrady was performing in London, and Forrest, the American, went over there and was like, if he was putting on Macbeth, Forrest would go over there and put on Macbeth in like a rival theater. real fun and petty, right?
His nemesis,
right? There was one famous instance where they said that it was said that the Forrest went to the theater and just hissed the entire time McReady was up there playing Hamlet. Yeah, it caused a scandal that followed McReady on his third and last trip to America. The lead up to the Astor Place theater riot, one of his shows on that tour, somebody threw a half carcass of a dead sheep on stage.
Oh my goodness.
Oh,
it's a little extreme.
Just a bit.
So can you imagine, like, you're just a British actor and you've got kind of this feud going with this rude, bombastic American, and you're like, oh, I'll go for another tour of the States. And they're like, here's a dead animal, you English fuck. Wait, what? I'm just at work here. And supposedly, Forrest actually had substantial connections amongst the working people and gangs in New York because he was from New York and he'd made his debut at the Bowery Theater, which was known to cater to kind of a working class audience only, mm-hmm. drawing from the largely violent immigrant heavy Five Points neighborhood of Lower Manhattan, a few blocks to the west. So conspiratorial minds might put something together there. We don't know. But what we do know is that 3 days before the riot, Forrest supporters bought hundreds of tickets to the Astor Opera House. They bought out the cheap seats, and when McReady was up there performing Macbeth, they actually managed to stop the show by pelting the stage with rotten eggs, potatoes, apples, lemons, shoes. They ripped up the seats and threw them at the stage.
Wow.
So Americans behaving badly is just a long-standing tradition.
Yep.
Long-standing. And we don't like the Brits. Apparently we do now. I don't know what happened.
I like them, but okay.
I mean, their comedy and their music is to die for, but...
They were said to have been crying out, down with the codfish aristocracy! And the theaters tried to they ended their performance of Hamlet in pantomime because no one could hear what they were saying.
Oh my gosh,
love it!
And then at that same night, Forrest was performing Macbeth and at a different theater, and he gave the Shakespeare line, "What rhubarb, senna, or what purgative drug will scour these English hens?" And everybody like rose and gave him a standing ovation. Ah, yes, fuck the British, fuck them, yes. Ah, very well, well done. So McReady was like, I'm not going back on stage. They literally stopped the show by throwing seats at us. He was approached by people. They signed a petition, 47 rich, well-heeled New Yorkers, including like authors Herman Melville, who wrote Moby Dick.
Oh, wow.
Washington Irving, who wrote Rip Van Winkle and Sleepy Hollow, were signed the petition. They came out and they were like, hey, look, and this is a quote, The good sense and respect for order prevailing in this community will sustain you on the subsequent nights of your performance. It doesn't say if that was Irving or Melville, but so this petition, or it's probably the petition. So this petition was like, hey, 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 that was one unruly crowd on one night. It so couldn't possibly be that bad again.
So they were petitioning for him to come back to the stage and act again.
Yes, yes. Okay. So on May 10th, the day of the riot, you might note, he agreed, all right, I'll go back on stage as Macbeth. Well, that's kind of when it went sideways. in the streets surrounding the theater, the working class Edwin Forrest fans all showed up and started gathering around the theater. They were bolstered. Their group was bolstered by the nativist groups who hated the British and Irish immigrants who hated the British, who saw this as kind of a culture protest against British influence and upper class culture, the rich motherfuckers in New York, right? They're like, hey, we can all get together and kind of protest them. City officials were aware of the potential for violence, and so they started stationing cops around the theater and publishing that day notices in the newspapers had been published calling for calm and respect law and order. But that only seemed to like amp people up.
Don't tell me what to do.
You're telling me to calm down? I fucking threw a half dead sheep on stage. You're telling me to calm down? So people start showing up for the theater. A lot of upper class New York people, they start to arrive and they start getting jeers and insults from the crowd as they're just trying to go to the theater. Police formed lines so people could get into the theater, right? Like you had the riot police holding the crowds back so the rich people in their suits can walk into the theater. Very cinematic moment.
Oh boy.
The house is packed. Okay. The theater's just full of people. MacReady starts his performance, and though the mood was tense, there's commotion. It was thought the theater took precautions. They barred the doors, and they increased the security. We're going to be cool. This is going to be cool. Outside, the crowd has swelled to several thousand people, some estimates as high as 10,000.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
The initial chants and boos start to turn into a barrage of stones, bricks, and rotten vegetables that they brought. And they just throwing them straight at the building. They're now just throwing it at the building. Like, fuck you, opera theater house. The police were massively outnumbered, could not disperse the mob, as they were now referring to.
What was the riot trying to do? What were the rioters trying to accomplish?
Just fuck the Brits.
Just
fuck the Brits.
But were the British in the theater? Was it popularized with British?
It wasn't just British. It was also the upper classes that were seen as kowtowing to British and following in the British line, right? They were seen as one. So this was very much a class protest of like, we've had it with your bullshit.
Yeah.
Right. Like these people, they felt they felt so powerless. And here's them taking back their power and using this actor and this group of wealthy people as a focal point, right, of their anger. And right.
Now it makes more sense. Sorry.
So the cops have to call for reinforcements. The mayor of New York, who was actually at the theater for the show, the mayor's there, got the National Guard mobilized.
Oh, wow.
And they actually, they're in this building getting pelted with bricks and shit. By mid-evening, National Guard arrives. They form up in the front of the theater with their bayonets out. And the crowd just starts to get more aggressive. Like,
it's on now.
I mean, it's what else do you expect? This whole story, every time this unruly mom is told not to do something, they're just going to go harder.
Yeah, they escalate.
The crowd begin to push up against the soldiers. Projectiles continue to rain down, and the crowd started trying to break the police lines, and which caused the officers in the National Guard to fire warning shots, which were completely ignored.
Of course.
And so they thought, okay, everybody inside is now at risk, and they started firing into the crowd.
Damn. Wow.
At least 22 people dead, hundreds others wounded. Very chaotic stampeding. The crowd quickly dispersed. That got through to them.
Yeah.
Oh shit! They were serious.
They're actually going to shoot at us. We should run.
These guys are using real bullets. Somebody could get hurt. The streets around were left in complete disarray. The wounded and dead scattered amongst debris. The shock of the event quickly spread through the city and dominated national headlines at the time. The public was horrified, and even the amount of disbelief that a cultural event could turn so violent. Like,
well, yeah.
It's just supposed to be Macbeth.
We're not supposed to be here.
Well, you know. How did Macbeth get so violent?
Macbeth turned deadly? Never.
What?
Yeah, never. So, marked a very tragic day, set kind of a precedent for how cultural and class conflicts could escalate into violence. At the time, this was the most violent event for American civilians since the Revolutionary War. At the
wow.
time, underscored the deep divisions in American society between the lower classes and the upper, the volatile yeah. nature of that public sentiment. And I can't believe I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I had not as well. That's fascinating. Yeah,
it's pretty major to...
I know, history. Right? Astor Opera House did not survive its reputation as the Massacre Opera House.
No.
some people called it Disaster Place. it tried to go of one more season, but it gave up. They gave up.
See, these days people be like, I can market this.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Nowadays you'd have so many more people come because of the fact that it was the site of a riot.
They would call themselves the Massacre Opera House.
Right. It'd be all about it.
Brilliant marketing plan.
The building eventually became the New York Mercantile Library. They opened the Academy of Music down the street for opera performances for the upper class. They moved it uptown away from the working class precincts, which I should note, the original Astor Opera House was located where lower and upper classes could both find it accessible because they're trying to cater to both markets.
Okay.
So they moved it. They moved it more towards the upper class. Well, I guess today the Upper West Side.
It'll be safer over here.
Forrest, the American actor Forrest, his reputation was badly damaged. He was seen as being an instigator.
Well, I mean,
and
kind of was.
Yeah. You know, professional actors started gravitating to respectable theaters, and vaudeville houses responded by mounting skits on serious Shakespeare. And it is seen as one of the events that led Shakespeare to be gradually removed from popular culture into a new category of more intellectual entertainment.
Hmm.
A shame that that was one of the outcomes, because Shakespeare is incredibly witty and so spot on in his observations of humanity and social structure and relationships, and there's just so much. Like, he's so good.
If you're a Shakespeare fan, do yourself a favor and check out the BBC show entitled Upstart Crow.
Okay.
It is a BBC sitcom starring David Mitchell, one of my favorite British comedians, as Shakespeare, and it's a sitcom, but it's just packed with Shakespeare references. So it's kind of like the sitcom version of how many of his plays got written, like the shenanigans that was going on in his personal life that he wrote into plays. Very, very fun. Very well done.
Yeah, I didn't click for that. What was the title again?
Upstart Crow.
There's also a fantastic British show, cozy mystery show called Shakespeare and Hathaway, that's littered with Shakespearean references as they solve mysteries.
Oh, that would be fun.
Obviously, the Brits are more into Shakespeare than we are. and that's the Astor Place riot in a nutshell. Whew, got all that out.
Okay. Well, I did think of a political riot that was instigated by someone who could be considered an actor.
All right. Let's hear it.
I hesitate to get a little too political, but, you know.
Let's hear it. What was
certain,
it?
Certain orange-faced man who thinks that he should rule the world, starting with the United fuck. States.
Oh, who's that? Fuck.
Yes, I went there.
He was an actor on reality television and professional wrestling.
You know, we were looking for an actor with outsized influence.
And he had his own show.
Okay. All right. I'll give you this one, Amber.
He's in the IMDb, so.
Okay. What about Ronald Reagan?
God damn it.
Two actors, outsized influence.
All right. I'm editing all this out. You got to make me look bad.
See? Was right.
Okay. Well done. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about some news.
Yeah. He needs to move on in case I'm right again.
Yeah, that's right.
In case.
It's time for some news from our point of view. If we could have a lap or two, it's time for some news.
Okay, so the big story for me, I put together a blog post about it, and I wouldn't shut up about it when I was playing cards the other night. Nobody else cared nearly as much as I did. This orangutan, a Sumatran orangutan named Rakus. They caught him using a plant to treat his facial wound.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first documented instance of an active wound treatment by a non-human species using a known plant with medicinal properties.
How about that?
That is fucking amazing.
Right? Fucking amazing. Okay, so I'm calling him an ancestor of Dr. Zaius, because that makes me giggle.
Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius.
So after he got a facial industry, he was observed selecting and chewing leaves from a plant called acar cooning. The Latin name is Fibraria tinctoria. It's actually used in traditional medicine for its analgesic, anti-inflammatory, and other healing properties. So he chewed these leaves up and then squeezed the juice onto his wound repeatedly over several days.
Yeah, he knew exactly what was up.
That is fascinating.
100%. And they managed, and you can, I don't know if the website will be live by the time you hear this, but you can find the pictures through the links.
That is so cool.
They took pictures of him every day, and you can see the wound healing in his face. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Brilliant. I love animals. They are so much smarter than we give them credit for.
This motherfucker is a doctor.
Right?
He is the orangutan equivalent of the earliest doctor to be like, oh, you know what? This herb right here, let's chew this. We'll squeeze up. How do you get there? That's amazing. It's fucking, yeah, right? Like, we're watching them develop I don't know where you'd want to put them on the evolutionary scale towards us, but they're on it. And this is a clear.
You know, just like you have that group of those bonobos that are using stone tools. They've technically entered the Stone Age.
Right. Right. Well,
that's the thing is, like, this might be the first time we caught them treating medicine, but that doesn't mean this is a new development. Right.
That's probably at least a partially learned behavior, a cultural, societal behavior that learned from watching others do. That's probably something that's been handed down for a while.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
They're not all that different from us. They really aren't.
This was the study. They did this study in Indonesia where Rakus and other orangutans have been under non-invasive observation. So they've put up all their cameras and stuff to observe.
Watch them without disturbing them.
Yeah. and they don't even know they're being served. They had all day tracking sessions, and behaviors, especially rare ones like the self-medication, were detailed. They put together a paper about it, and I'll definitely link to the paper and the images in the episode description.
Yeah, I'd like to read that.
Fucking fascinating stuff.
It's amazing. I have seen several like picture memes over the last little bit of like the one that comes to mind the most is a gorilla who at the zoo who saw a woman with her baby standing there at the window, and the gorilla went and got its baby to show off to this other mother. Like,
look. Oh, you've got your baby? Look at my baby. We're both moms.
Look at my baby. You know, and to me, that's just, I don't know. There's connection there that we should be honoring.
You don't have to tell me. Animals are smart as fuck.
They are.
Speaking of smart as fuck, astronauts could get a new way to exercise in orbit and on the moon. Yeah. Are you familiar with the Wall of Death carnival motorcycle thing where they drive the motorcycle into the sphere and they start going around and around and around?
Yes.
That's what they've come up with. They're actually using that's exactly what they're using. They bought a couple of those because they're already made. And that then the astronaut can actually jog inside of there.
Oh my gosh. That's intense.
You know, kind of like the astronauts jogging around on 2001 A Space Odyssey. They're, you know, going around the loop.
Yeah. Right.
Running upside down up the wall. Yeah.
Yesterday's science fiction is today's science.
Arthur C. Clarke, he saw the future.
Wow. I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, you're on the moon. You can't run. Can't jog. Well, you can if you're doing it in a fucking 3D sphere.
Yeah.
That's got to be really, really strange to be the person running in that circle, right?
Yeah. Your center of gravity is always beneath you. You're always being pulled. Yeah. It's
because of your momentum and inertia, you're being held to whichever's wherever your feet is.
What a sensation.
I wonder if that would do anything, like if you were the perfect height for your head to be in the center of the sphere, if that would fuck with your experience and your blood flow. If like,
yeah, what would that do to your equilibrium? Yeah.
That's interesting to consider.
Would it be like standing on your head where all your blood would pool to your head, right? Like,
it could be quite unpleasant.
We'll find out.
We'll write to NASA. Tell them you're an 8-year-old boy and you're curious, and maybe they'll like invite you to come try it out.
My third grade class has a question for you guys.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't want to start correspondence with NASA with deception.
On a bad foot, no.
Hey guys, I'm telling you this easily verifiable falsehood. Anyway.
Or just and write to them and say, I'm a 40-something-year-old man that just read this and I have to try it.
I'm a man-child, and I'm interested.
That's exactly what I would write them.
Chronologically, I'm 42. Emotionally, I'm just kidding.
To wrap up science news, there's a new paper titled A Cosmic Glitch in Gravity, and it's exploring general relativity, particularly on the cosmological scale. And this actually goes in line with that paper that we talked about last month, where they were like, what if there isn't dark energy?
Right.
What if? So apparently, you know, the general relativity, the standard model of gravity known for its predictions aligning with observations across all the scales. Well, we know it doesn't integrate well with quantum mechanics, right? Like the theory of general relativity isn't
right.
Like there's no one thing. They're having problems. So this paper discusses theories like the Lifshitz gravity and Einstein ether theory, which is suggesting a variation in the gravitational constant between large and small scales. And the core idea is that constant differs on large scale and small scale. It's not actually constant.
That would make sense.
Making, putting a new parameter into the model. And that lines up really nicely with that guy's theoretical paper was like, if you take out dark energy, and just assume that these things aren't constant, you can account for all of it.
Right.
The paper fits the cosmological model with the cosmic microwave background data from the Planck satellite, suggesting that there's a slight reduction in the strength of gravity on large scales, which would resolve discrepancies in their observations, such as the Hubble constant tension and clustering anomalies that they've seen. Mm-hmm. The Hubble tension is they've observed discrepancies in when they measure the universe's expansion rate,
okay.
and then compare it to what the data from local measurements using the cosmic microwave background data. And they also get those discrepancies when they're measuring galaxy clustering. And this paper did all the data analysis and concluded that while their modified model introduces additional parameters, hence complexity, it does offer a potentially promising way to address those unresolved issues in cosmology, particularly those involving the large-scale structure of the universe and the universe expansion rate. So they're not going as broad as the other guy, but everything seems broad when it's galactic in scale. Right. But they're more narrowing it down to they're trying to figure out why the Hubble constant and the universe expansion data don't jive. And,
right.
And this fascinating new paper is like, maybe it's because the gravitational constant isn't so constant.
Doesn't.
Yep.
That would make sense.
Okay. All right. You know what? Before we start talking about snake oil today, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Guys, you got to go get your own coffee mug, shirt. It's all stuff you're going to need anyway.
You have to have it.
It's not... I'm not trying to sell you some Ronco, I'm going to slice your veggies 27 different ways product. All we're doing is saying, hey, come over and support us. Buy a shirt. You wear shirts.
Need a shirt? We have a shirt.
Buy a magnet. You throw that shit on your fridge. I know I do. It's fun.
Yeah.
You can find all of that stuff over at halfcocktails.com/shop. I'm trying to be a better salesman instead of just a jokester. We'll see. Hey, you know what else is for sale? The finest snake oil this side of the Kuiper Belt.
Yes.
Bring it.
Oh, snake oil on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, so, right. We've all experienced if you're listening to this show, I can confidently say you have experienced the last 5 years as an adult.
Most likely.
Well,
if you're listening to this show.
Chronologically.
If you haven't, fantastic. Welcome. You're fine. Don't move on. You stay here. Maybe you'll learn a thing or two.
Don't tell your parents.
And we won't tell anybody.
No, tell your parents to listen too. What do you got? What? Just remind your parents that the word fuck never hurt anybody. That's all. That's actually the worst part of this show is how much I swear. I'm hoping culture and society changes enough to where swears are meaningless. Like Shakespearean swears, like nobody cares about that anymore.
Hey, but they should because they're so clever.
You bite your thumb at me?
How dare
you? You just bite your thumb at me?
So uncouth.
I bite my thumb, sir, but not at you. Anyway, okay, so in a pretty well, and I will link to this, a well-written blog post by a guy named Matt Stoller, he writes the big newsletter, he lays out this story based on the FTC having just found this evidence that American oil companies colluded with the Saudi government to hike gasoline prices, costing the average American family $3,000 a year.
No way.
They did this in 2021. Yeah, I know. Everybody, all these gasps, right?
Unbelievable.
So believable.
And you call me a conspiracy theorist. There's proof.
Like, of course they do.
Irish immigrants will attack British people, for sure. But oil companies don't collude with oil companies.
They're in it for our public good, not for their
They're so altruistic.
So altruistic. Okay, so the claim is, from 2021, U.S. shale oil producers colluded with the Saudi government to increase gas prices. They were trying to control competition and, you know, prices in favor of higher profits. After they'd had kind of OPEC price war from 2014 to 2016. So you had major U.S. shale producers like Pioneer Natural Resources, who they had the CEO, this guy named Scott Sheffield. He was said to have exchanged these messages with OPEC representatives to reduce oil production and in artificially inflate the prices, which would, if successful, bring prices up not just for gasoline at the pump, but everything, because not only is oil and plastics in everything, but then we also have to ship it and move the things that are created. So the thinking and the suspicion is that it's the number one contribution to rising oil prices from 2021.
Absolutely.
So that's probably costs. The blog estimates $500 to $1,000 extra annually based on that inflation. And now the FTC actually did release evidence supporting this. The Exxon and Pioneer were having a merger. And so the FTC went through all their books for the merger. And they imposed sanctions saying, okay, you can merge, but this guy Sheffield can no longer be in any leadership positions.
He's sketchy AF.
Which is remarkable for the FTC to do.
Yeah.
To actually say the founder of this company can't have anything to do with it anymore is big. It is big. And he's the one who they have all the evidence of all the collusion.
So I move that they seize that man's assets and use them to give all of us a rebate.
Right? It's if only it were that simple.
Punish that man.
He exchanged hundreds of text messages with OPEC representatives.
Wow.
They were talking about crude oil dynamics, pricing, output. He's always been explicit about his goal to influence OPEC to reduce production. Like, he doesn't even hide that. Like, he's open and public about that.
Grifting in plain sight.
Right? Sheffield communicated with shareholders and publicly threatened rivals as part of his strategy. He was committed to maintaining reduced oil output across the industry, regardless of rising prices, even stating that if oil gets to $200 a barrel, the independent producers are going to be disciplined. Like, he was like, we'll fucking hurt your smaller oil company if you don't get in line. Following the release of evidence by the FTC, Sheffield remarked in 2023 that by previously competing with OPEC and producing too much oil, the industry had actually lowered the price by $20 to $30 per barrel over the past 10 years.
Bullshit.
Which he viewed as detrimental to investor support.
How horrid.
Oh, detrimental to the already rich people. Heaven forbid. Hey, I'm starting to see how that riot happened.
Yeah, right. At one point, the Biden administration was begging to increase production, and publicly oil companies and people like Sheffield were saying, we can't. Biden won't let us.
Wow.
So it's Biden regulations, even though the government was doing everything they could to increase production to get the prices down. Yeah, it's some shady shit. And it's literally snake oil, those fuckers. Well, I guess not literally. It's figuratively snake oil, but it's more literal than usual.
It's actual oil this time. Not from a snake that we know of, but...
My car's powered by snake oil.
But by snakes.
87 octane snake oil.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Sorry. The power... The problem goes beyond just the fact that... everything costs more now, too, because people are believing that they're selling, like, it's Biden's fault we can't lower prices. Well, people are believing
that, so
it's affecting political choices. It's like this big, massive circle. It affects the political choices, and then we get somebody in there who does something, and it just spirals.
The amount of politicians that vote against a bill that helps their constituents and then turn around and tell their constituents, I did this for you, is astounding.
Look what I did. Yes,
it is.
Absolutely. And Biden's done a pretty good job of illuminating that when it's happened, too, and tweaking the person publicly, yeah, which is amusing.
Makes me want to fire them all and just start over.
Now, hold on. We've made some progress. So let's try. If we're starting over, let's at least keep the Universal Bill of Human Rights. Anyway. All right. Let's. Hey, you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's Fact Check of Time.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the proof that all the kids call fact checking time.
Welcome to Fact Checking Time, the news show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. All right, today, Ron, you are playing for Poncho Cat, co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts, and whether you win or lose decides whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner.
I'll do my best, Poncho.
He's gotten pretty used to wet food, so if you disappoint him...
I don't want to disappoint him. He'll remember.
Ron, last week I went 3 for 3, so no pressure.
None at all.
But I actually went 3 for 3. I just wanted to put that out there again.
Just saying.
Okay. I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. They may be articles, they might be social media posts, they could be interview quotes, they could be random facts that were just talked about in a news story. Only some of them were fact-checked. Okay? Are we ready to begin?
I am ready. Let's do it.
Either the world's most tattooed woman, blinded by an eyeball tattoo, is ready to get another eyeball tattoo, despite what doctors say. Or the star of the animated Disney classic Frozen, Kristen Bell, has 214 tattoos and is not stopping. Which one was fact-checked?
I am going to go with the eyeball tattoo gal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
that was not fact-checked. Oh, yeah. She went blind for 3 weeks after her first eyeball tattoo, and now she's ready to get another one.
You know, get back on that horse.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to look it up, but I've heard that there's like an actual addiction to getting the ink on your skin.
Right?
Yeah, they are very addicting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? She's a beautiful lady. Not going to lie. World's most tattooed woman. British lady. Anyway, Kristen Bell does not have 214 tattoos. She does have tattoos, but...
not that many.
Not 214.
I knew that because I love her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
She's great. It was a Funny or Die sketch that had her covered in tattoos, so people were taking that image.
Okay. Okay.
Either urinating in a swimming pool can damage the heart and lungs of swimmers, or you can eliminate urine smell from toilets by using cheap men's shaving cream.
Okay.
Ooh. I want that to be true.
I'm going to go with the shaving cream.
Oh, Ron, 0 for 2. Poncho.
Poncho, I've screwed you over.
Wow.
You went the wrong way, wow. Ron.
Wow.
Dang. Brutal, 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 brutal.
Now you'll have to get the third one wrong.
The urine smell is cleaned from a toilet with men's shaving cream. Cheaper the better. Okay. Not the gel.
Not the gel. Okay, that's important.
Use the cream. Let it sit 30 minutes. Just cover your toilet in the cream. You know, empty it. Turn the water off. Cover it in shaving cream. Let it sit 30 minutes, scrub it off, good to go.
Okay.
And the fact checked was, yes, piss in a swimming pool, that mixed with the chlorine fucks with people's lungs,
ammonia
and lungs.
Fumes, right?
Yeah, don't do it. It's actually not just gross. It's harmful to health. Okay, last one.
Sorry, Poncho.
Let's regain some dignity. I'll at least give Poncho... some cat treats with dinner if you get this
okay.
Correct. Okay. All right. Well, it's a little mini bonus just because I love the furry little guy. Okay. Either the Simpsons groundskeeper Willie is the subject of a feud between two Scottish towns? Or SpongeBob SquarePants was based on the real life story of a child who grew up working labor in a burger joint.
Wow. Wow. All right, I'm going to go with the Groundskeeper Willie story. Low confidence.
Complete shutout, Ron. Complete shutout. Not one.
Brutal. Ugly.
I feel bad now. I'm sorry, Poncho Cat. I cursed it.
I'm defeated.
Yeah, yeah. It's.
Please don't hold it against me, Poncho.
You didn't do it. Ron did it.
Well, that's true.
I didn't do it. That was the problem.
Yeah, so there's two towns in Scotland that both claim to be where Groundskeeper Willie is from.
The birthplace of Groundskeeper Willie. Visit our town, the home of Groundskeeper Willie.
Right. This fictional character that's just a caricatured accent by an American actor.
You should be a little offended, maybe. Yeah.
Right. The report was SpongeBob was based on a boy's abusive childhood in the 40s, but no. The guy who created SpongeBob SquarePants was like, I love marine biology.
That makes more sense.
All right. Let's wrap things up with a feel-good story.
A goal for a sip. Maybe even a hit. And join us for
scientists always out there doing their research. They found a way to convert methane emissions from landfills into sustainable jet fuel.
What?
Big win. Yeah, they use these, they call methane wells to trap the methane emissions from a garbage dump. And they're able to, it's like a shaft-like mechanism that extracts the gas. And they're able to extract it into this plasma, a non-thermal plasma. They're using a non-thermal plasma. They're able to extract it and store it and even make a jet fuel out of it.
Wow.
Which is huge as we're trying to limit these carbon emissions.
Yeah.
Methane's one of the nasty gases fucking with our atmosphere. And landfills are only growing, right? Every country on the planet does the same thing. Everybody chucks their trash. They haul it away to someplace where you don't see it.
Yep. Until we get too low on resources, and then we'll start excavating those landfills for goods, for recycling. It's going to happen. Yeah. Gold mine someday. Be excavating those landfills for resources.
Satellite data showed that there were 1,256 methane super emitter events from landfills between January 2019 and 2023.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah. So being able to not only trap this, but then be able to like recycle and actually use it as a fuel.
That's amazing.
Huge win.
It'd be incredible.
You know, California right now is having some major issues with a couple of landfills leaking toxic things into their environment. So, wow, it's nasty. Yeah, it's a couple of big ones.
University of Sydney came up with this one and could be a real game changer and help us get away from these oil companies that don't have our interests at heart. They have profit.
No, it's the shareholders' interests at heart.
Yeah, sadly.
And CEO bonuses.
Yeah, so being able to help save the planet two ways definitely qualifies as a feel good for me. Sadly, though, good things have to come to an end.
No,
eventually.
Yeah,
that's what they say.
But
don't worry, we'll be back next week.
We will. Before we go, got to thank our this week's sponsor, Wonka Industries, the original slave labor candy. Just amazing stuff. You know, I swear you can taste the Oompa Loompa sweat. And it just makes it so delicious.
So that good.
Salt in the chocolate. Mm.
Sweet and savory.
Wait. Is that how salted caramel works?
Yeah, the children's sweat into the caramel. Certainly how it started.
Okay. Makes so much sense now.
Looks like we don't have any time left to talk about that one quick exercise to optimize your genitals for aesthetics and pleasure. Sorry.
I was really waiting for that one.
Dang it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll never know.
That was the most important piece, and you just went right past it.
Ba-doom, boom. I know. Ha-cha-cha.
So disappointed.
I need to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and The Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Do either of you have any parting wisdom you'd like to share before we go?
Oh, just hope everyone has had a good Cinco de Mayo, a good May the 4th be with you, Revenge of the 5th, and all that good stuff. And and get ready for Mother's Day, folks. Let's have fun.
Boom.
Remember, when life gives you lemons, add some tequila.
Or make a limoncello.
I prefer the Cave Johnson Portal 2 lemons quote. When life gives you lemons, don't make lemonade. Make life take the lemons back. Get mad. I don't want your damn lemons. What am I supposed to do with these? Demand to see life's manager. Make life rue the day it thought it could give Cave Johnson lemons. Do you know who I am? I'm the man who's going to burn your house down with the lemons. I'm going to get my engineers to invent a combustible lemon that burns your house down.
When life gives you, when life doesn't give you lemons, you get scurvy.
Yes, hell yeah, hell yeah. All right, have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us, you know what to do. Tell somebody that needs to hear us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, we're over on Patreon. We'll have all those links in the episode description. Thanks for stopping by. Now go out and be well.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. Half-cocked, half-cocked. We had a good time talking today. But even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration. Oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.